It's 8:13 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Mountainlands Community Housing Trust will soon start accepting applications for the first phase of what will eventually be 330 new affordable units over the next 2 to 3 years at Silver Creek Village. In the studio with details on that, as well as other affordable housing developments, I have the director of Mountainlands Community Housing Trust, Scott Loomis. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Leslie.
So Silver Creek Village is located there on the southeast corner of Interstate 80 and U.S. 40. So what's the first phase?
Well, the project was approved about 5 or 6 years ago, and they started the infrastructure last year. So there's a loop road that's going through there, and there'll be a number of market units starting at the first August, probably. We plan on starting 64 apartments and up to 30 townhouses in August, and then we've got a pretty aggressive schedule after that. We're going to start 33 apartments in the spring and apply for low-income housing tax credits in October for 106 units and 24 units, and hope to start those, if we're awarded the competitive tax credits, the following summer. So basically about 227 apartments and a little over 100 townhouses, and those will be built as the demand warrants.
Yeah. Tell me the difference between an apartment and a townhouse.
Well, townhouses will be for sale. The apartments will be will have studios, ones, twos, and three and four bedrooms. The townhouses will be two, three, and four bedrooms. But they'll be they'll have their own garages, where the apartments will have a carport and other parking for them. So ownership probably be in the range of there'll be 1,300 to 1,600 square feet roughly, and the range of 250 to maybe 310,000 for the purchase.
Yeah, so about 330 units out of a total of 1,280 that's being built at Silver Creek Village will be deemed affordable. So what does that mean?
It means they'll be permanently restricted and always affordable. And one of the requirements for the development was that they be phased in as the development was completed, and that would have probably been over maybe a 10-year period. This way, since we have such a critical need here in our community, we're going to do it all in the first couple of years. Future development out there will be primarily market rate after the affordable units are built.
Right. So, I mean, I know we've gone back and forth on how many affordable units are needed for our community. At this point, what's that number? Do we know?
Well, actually, the needs assessment for Park City was completed about 4 or 5 months ago, and we expect one from Jim Wood at the University of Utah this week for the Snyderville Basin in East County. And it doesn't put a particular number on. It has a whole lot of shortages that are identified. So basically they say that there's so many people that are overburdened in rentals, so we need so many rentals at this price range. So it's critical, and I've seen and heard numbers, 1,000 units or more. And it just to keep up with the growth that Jeff Jones, the economic development director of the county, talks about, we need 200 or 300 units per year just to keep up with the job growth in the community. So we don't know what the number is, but we haven't reached it yet, that's for sure.
So with these 330, another 900 units from at the base of the canyons there, another 800 committed by Park City Municipal, are we going overboard here?
We don't know. As we were just discussing, we were looking at a large parcel that could have generated potentially 600 or 700 units, and we've declined to move forward with that because, and I don't know that it's going to be 900 units at the canyons. I think they're going to house 900 employees, so it's going to be a smaller number than that. But they've committed to do it in the next 2 or 3 years, so there's a lot going on, and we'll find out exactly what the demand is. And it's hard to really identify the demand because you have all the statistics and census data that talks about Summit County, but the 13,000 cars that come into the county every day, that's what we're trying to capture is get some of those people who come in to live up here. So we don't know what that number is, but hopefully it'll be a fairly substantial number of people that'll live up here rather than just commuting up here.
Yeah, and certainly it's been shown to be true is that if we build it, they will come. So, I mean, I guess I'm just, aren't we always going to be short on units? I mean, if people think, oh, there's affordable units, they move here, and then now we need more units.
Well, I've been doing this for 16 years, and I think I can safely say in the next 2 years we're going to find out how many units we need.
So do these units, should they all be deed restricted?
They'll all be restricted permanently.
Why is that important to do?
Well, because you don't want to create affordable housing and then have it go away someday. You want to be in control of it. And without the permanent affordability, there's going to be a windfall down the road for somebody, where whether it's 20 years, 30 years, and then you start all over again. So these will be permanently restricted. Probably the for sale units will be using a community land trust model where there'll be a 99-year lease, but we'll maintain control of the land. So if for some reason, 60 years from now, a decision is made not to utilize it as affordable housing, we'll still have control of that land.
Yeah. So Mountain Lands Community Housing builds those units in Silver Creek Village?
Yes. We'll be responsible for building all of them.
And so where do you get all the money?
Oh, there's a lot of different sources. As I mentioned, some of them will be low-income housing tax credits, which provides quite a bit of equity. But basically, financing. We've already met with lenders. We're moving forward, ready to go. There's a big appetite for Community Reinvestment Act credit from banks that are housed in Utah. So there's money out there. Making the numbers work is the challenge. Trying to get financing balance so the rents are reasonable and meet the criteria that are required in the development agreement. And for example, the for sale units have to be 80% median income and below, and half of them have to be below 60% median income. And the rentals all have to be below 60% median income, and half of them have to be below 50% median income. And that's tough to do without some of these funds that are available.
Yeah. Will you see subsidies from Summit County for Silver Creek?
There's some provisions in the code, and we've already met with them and discussed them, of some fee waivers. So they'll be participating in that regard. But right now we're not asking for any money. We think we can make it work without having to go to local sources like that.
Yeah, and given the growth that we're seeing, I mean, we had heard just recently that there's a 12% increase on all construction costs just if it's being done in Park City. So you've got to absorb that as well.
Yeah, it's a tough time to be building. And we've talked to a few builders, and we're going to get some that have the capacity to do this many units in a short period of time. So that's an important element of what we're trying to do here.
So who manages the rentals? You?
We actually have a management company that all these are fairly complicated. There's a lot of compliance with income qualifications and all the state people and the federal people and everything. So we just contract that out with a management company, Sellers Group, which manages all of our properties and has for many years.
Mm-hmm. And then in terms of who pays for what repairs and, you know, I mean, upgrades to...
That all comes out of the rent. You've got your debt service and then your operating expenses that come out of the rent. And that's the balancing that makes it very difficult.
And then the for sale will be required to be owner-occupied.
Yes, owner-occupied. The development agreement does say that they'll be for local workforce. So we'll do some scoring. We haven't determined exactly what it's going to be, but there certainly will be preferences given to people who have worked here for a long time.
Right. Is there any preference then towards teachers, police, firefighters, those sorts of services?
I think we haven't done the final scoring, but we are going to have a preference for government employees and nonprofit employees. So they will have some advantage, but primarily it's going to be tied to local workforce.
Mm-hmm. And then what are some of the community benefits around this neighborhood? Or is it going to be interspersed, or is it going to kind of be, because we've gone back and forth on that as well, whether or not affordable units should be part of the entire community, or
they're going to be in the first phase of development. So they'll be dispersed with other townhouse projects, multifamily projects. There are actually some pretty nice locations. A large parcel adjoins the park, one of the parks, and other one, some open space. So it's going to be. The project is very dense. It's 1,280 units and a lot of four stories. So we'll have three and four stories. It'll be more like a Daybreak than anything we've seen up here before. So it's going to be a fairly tight community. So there'll be all the amenities within the subdivision that the developer has to provide will be reasonably close.
Right. And those amenities include what? I mean, because the whole idea is to try and get people out of their cars and,
Yeah, there's going to be about 50,000 square feet of commercial. The bus service, obviously, will be out there. There's a number of parks. Basin Rec has quite a bit of land that they're going to develop with fields and those type of activities. There's a school site that I think might be a charter school, but I'm not sure if anything's committed at this point. So there'll be quite a bit of amenities within the community there.
Yeah, some kind of transit center? Or just a bus
stop? I don't believe there's going to be one there, but there's going to be quite a bit of bus circulation going through there.
All right. Let's talk quickly about the Homeownership 101 workshops. These are coming up May 8th and May 15th, both of being held at the Park City Board of Realtors office at 1889 Prospector Avenue, 6 to 8 p.m. So who should show up for these?
Well, we haven't had any of these for probably 3 or 4 years, and we used to have really good turnout, but we haven't had any product to really talk about for a long time other than an occasional resale. So the Park City Board of Realtors, Habitat for Humanity, Mountain Lands, and Park City Municipal Corporation will be presenting this, and it's a good opportunity for people who are not familiar with what it takes to be a homeowner to come and learn. There'll be a lot of discussion about financing, getting mortgages, your credit, and those type of things. We'll also be talking about homeownership opportunities that are available. As I mentioned, Silver Creek Village, we have our self-help program that we're still doing up in Francis. We have one unit there, and we'll probably do it at Silver Creek Village, which is the first time we'll be over in this part of the county. Park City has their Park Avenue properties that are under construction right now, so they'll be talking about those and perhaps more. So, and also Discovery, which is out by the Weilerman School, is very, very close to approval, and they want to get started with construction of the infrastructure this summer. And there'll be some discussion about 30 affordable units that'll be for sale there. So there's quite a bit to talk about.
Yeah. And in terms of applying for any of these units, I mean, is there one kind of master list that you just put your name on, or is
there's going to be a joint application with the city. So we're working together to have one application so you don't have to apply three different places. And we've committed to have it on our website by May 22nd. And probably the way it will work is we'll give everybody 2 or 3 weeks to get the application in. We'll start accepting them on a certain date in June, and they'll have a couple of weeks to get it in, and then we'll start scoring and seeing who's going to line up for those. So there'll be a lot of information at the Homeownership 101 workshops, but by the 22nd of May, there'll be information on our website, which is housinghelp.org.
Yeah, so for any of these affordable units that would be purchased, that people would be a homeowner, how challenging is it for them to find financing for deed-restricted housing?
It's not that difficult. The difficulty we have is if they don't listen to us and we send them to certain sources that know how to deal with deed-restricted units, they have a lot better luck because typically they'll go to their bank or some lender who says, oh, it's not a problem, and then as it hits underwriting about 6 weeks down the road, they say, oh, these are deed restrictions. What do we do with it? So they'll learn a little bit about that at these homeownership workshops. But there's a number of programs out there with either no or low down payments. So we'll be encouraging them to utilize as many of these as possible.
Right. And can somebody just do this on their own? I mean, do they necessarily need a realtor? Because that kind of seems like it would just then defeat the purpose of keeping.
Yeah, they do not need a realtor for the deed restricted. One of the reasons the Park City Board of Realtors participates in this is because there are people who are interested in call it the lower end market rate units that are available that they can potentially qualify for. So they're going to learn about what it takes to purchase those and how a realtor can help. But for sure, the deed restricted units, there's no need for a realtor. They, certainly somebody can get counsel or advice from a realtor, but they're not listed per se. They don't make commissions on them. And it's a pretty easy process.
All right. Again, that homeownership workshop's May 8th and May 15th, both at the Park City Board of Realtors office, 6 to 8 p.m.
Yep.
Finally, just wanted to mention, because you referred it earlier about a parcel that Mountain Lands was at one point interested in, some 350 acres there by Richardson Flat, and with plans to build as many as 600 units. There was a meeting that was scheduled, I think, last week, and then the meeting pulled. How come?
Well, we decided not to go forward with it, and the process we thought would take maybe a year to get it entitled and be able to start building fairly quickly, but we realized that it was going to take a little bit more than that. Plus, we're doing 330 units at Silver Creek Village. We've got 38 units at we're building a senior center over in Heber. We've got 9 units in Francis we're going to start building this year. So we have a lot on our plate, and then the county has purchased the Klein Dolly parcel, and they've asked us to partner with them on the housing element of that. It looks like the Canyons is going to go forward with the entire obligation in the next 2 or 3 years. So we started this last summer, the discussion, and had it under contract since January. But from our standpoint, there's a lot happening, and the city's committed to the 800 units that they're audacious goal, and we've actually had discussions with them about perhaps if we did this parcel out in Richardson Flats that they might back off on that goal a little bit or not consider going 4 or 5 stories or multifamily in the middle of town, and they are committed to do that. So there's a lot going on, and as we discussed earlier, I don't know exactly what that market was, but it was just too big of a bite for us at this time.
Yeah, so, and the property zoned mountain,
it's
remote, 1 unit per 120 acres, so you'd need a rezone.
We had to create a new zone. We actually drafted one that was going to be presented last week, and again, it was a lot of effort, a lot of work, and not a certainty by any means, and quite a bit of financial risk, so we just decided now was not a good time for it.
So what planning jurisdiction was it in, Snyderville Basin or East
yes,
Side?
Yes, Snyderville Basin. And it was in Park City School District, too. So I just saw Todd out there. So he's breathing a sigh of relief.
Okay. Anything else, Scott, you wanted to mention?
Well, for the Homeownership 101, there's limited space. So I would encourage anybody who's interested to sign up and make a reservation. And they can do that at the Board of Realtors office, which is 200-200-6900. And be sure and reserve a space. Because I think since we do have product, I think we're going to be full.
All right. Scott, thanks for your time this morning.
Great. Thank you, Leslie.
Scott Loomis is the Executive Director of Mountain Lands Community Housing Trust. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. The Park City Board of Education spent time at yesterday's board meeting discussing the budget for next school year. In the studio, I have Business Administrator Todd Halber, along with School Board Member Andrew Kaplan. Good morning to both of you guys.
Good morning.
So, Todd, I have not seen the entire budget, just pages of new staff. And how much are we talking about for next year's budget?
So the total cost, we also have some base budget reductions as well, but the total cost that we're looking at this point is about $2.3 million additional. From that, we have from the estimated property growth and monies coming from the state legislature, about $1.4 million coming in. So we're looking at reserves right now to balance things out. That's what we had yesterday morning as we talked. Boy, I got my board meetings mixed up.
Okay, so
there, it's rolling together right now. So these are the pieces we have at hand. We still have negotiation conversations going on. Those we hope will wrap up here in the next little bit, and that will bring other considerations to the table.
So we have $2.3 million in additional needs?
Correct.
And $1.4 of that will be?
New money coming in to help cover those costs.
Right, so we're only talking about $900,000?
Dipping deficiency? Into the reserves, yeah.
Okay, what about, is that for all 40 jobs? Because we had heard at one point that was going to be about $4.1 million.
So that's for 25.5 jobs. In the presentation that was made yesterday, we took all of that ask list and started to map out how exactly could we implement that. And about 25 positions are ones that we need immediately. We need them for this upcoming school year, especially in the areas for intervention and for special education and the teacher supports. Then we have a year two scenario where we're bringing in additional supports, but those can wait until the first infrastructure is put in place and is functional. And then we had a third year piece as well. So there's about three FTE or so in each of those subsequent years. So we'll get closer to that 40 number over time, not all at once.
Right. How much do you have in the rainy day fund?
In the rainy day fund, my estimate right now is a little over $6 million when we get to the end of this school year.
So when you start talking about adding staff, and lucky that you have the new growth to help and the state legislature with a 4% increase in the WPU.
That was very helpful.
So what happens when that doesn't happen?
As far as
new growth and the legislature being so generous.
That's a risk.
How do you sustain that?
That's the risk we take. And so we have to either look at more prudent use of the reserves to carry ourselves out into the future, or the only other source would be to turn to tax revenues and look at property tax increases as we move forward in time. So we'd want to balance that out to make sure that we're using the reserves appropriately and not coming to the taxing public until we need to.
All right. Andrew, any discussion in terms of how you'd be sustainable over the next several years when you start talking about adding 40 new positions?
Yeah, absolutely. We, I think Todd's done a great job since he's joined the district in terms of making sure that our budget's balanced and that we have a rainy day fund. And I think what we try to do is project out 5 years and get an idea as to using as conservative as possible, growth projections, tax revenue projections, et cetera. And we've done that and we have those numbers and we can, make a reasonable assumption as to what that looks like over time. And I think, the one piece is the superintendent's budget proposal. And as Todd mentioned, the other piece will be, our negotiations around compensation for our licensed, classified, administrative staffs.
Well, let's talk a little about that. How does Park City even compare with what Granite School District did last night, increasing teacher salaries by more than 11%?
Yeah, so, I think there's a lot of different ways of looking at the headline numbers. Our district is very generous with regards to our benefits package. And there's also another positive in that we have a wonderful community and a beautiful place to come and work. Great students, great families, et cetera. What Granite's done and what other districts in the state are doing is emblematic of what is happening nationwide, which is we have a nationwide teacher shortage. We have a statewide teacher shortage. Fewer people are going into the profession. And, overall, the salaries just aren't commensurate with the jobs. And so I think as a community, we have to make a decision. I know where I stand on that. And I think I know where most of the community stands on it. But as a community, we have to make a decision. Do we prioritize paying our teachers? And making sure that they are comfortable and they feel valued and that they can truly be a part of our community. And there's a lot of other aspects to that in addition to compensation. It's affordability. It's working with, the district and, the city and the county to make sure that there's housing for our employees. And, there's a lot of different things that we are going to be looking at, not only in the negotiation cycle, but also beyond that as projects to try to get our teachers more comfortable in this community again and to make them feel valued.
Yeah. Where are we now with starting salaries for our teachers?
So the starting salary for the a teacher with a bachelor's degree is $40,000 and for a master's degree is $45,000. So that's the baseline. And then we have enhancements to that the teachers are eligible for. We have adjustments for a living allowance. There's an additional $1,500 that's available for that. We have professional development monies, another $2,500. And then we have something unique to Park City in that we have endorsement recognition. And so additional $1,000 for specific endorsements are recognized and paid. And so a typical teacher will get that baseline plus another about $5,000 worth of pay. And so when I look at what happens down in the valley to see what is comparable, I can do the first line and just say, okay, the baseline is the same, but we have these other enhancements that come to the teachers as well. So I think the valley's getting closer to us, but we need to respond in some fashion to the fact that the whole the whole level is rising up, and where do we stand in being competitive and retaining teachers that way.
So you don't think the Granite School District news is throws a wrench into our local negotiations at all?
I hope not. If anything, it helps us to look at different levels of what's out there and available and what our competition is to keep our teachers here that we want to have and attract others to come and work for us.
So even with these 25 new hires, if the board decides that we are going to hire all of them, do the people even exist to be hired given the low unemployment rate?
Yeah, I mean, that's always the challenge, right? And, you know, we have an HR director who does quite a bit of research on, you know, on salaries for these positions and what the salaries look like in the state and nationwide. And, you know, we conduct local and nationwide searches for a lot of our roles, and we will pay the rates that we need to pay. And, you know, the other aspect of that, of course, is that while this is a wonderful place to live, it's an expensive place to live. And, you know, we recognize that, you know, instead of comparing ourselves necessarily to other places in Utah, we have to now compare ourselves to other high cost places around the country and look at salaries, you know, that are commensurate with those places. And, you know, in order to attract and retain teachers or administrators or school psychologists or whatever it is, we have to be realistic that the cost of living here is very high and we need to compensate appropriately.
And where do we put them? I mean, where do you even, that's like filling a classroom with 25 new people, right? And we don't even have enough classrooms as it is.
Yeah, and we're already going down that path. So after the discussions yesterday with the board and we saw that we have a signal of a direction that we need to go, all of that planning is happening now as to what are the right settings for these individuals, what spaces do they need, are they spaces where they need private consultation, or can they be in spaces where they're together sharing offices. We're going through all of that now. I know I had expressed a concern earlier on about where do we put them all. Now we're serious about, okay, let's answer that question, and we're finding places.
Yeah, and I think it's a very good question, and it also, you know, it's related to the question around the bond and us building new facilities. As a community, you know, we have certain priorities. One is smaller class size. Another is to offer a lot of different programs, whether it's EVA or, you know, a new mental health program initiative that we're going to be offering and things like that. And all of those take up space in our facilities. And so I think we have to recognize that as a community, we've made certain decisions that we want to offer, you know, best in class programming and smaller class sizes. And, you know, as a result of that, we need more facilities, and we need to be continuing to build those, you know, as our population grows and as we increase those programs. And it's a very fair question, but it's also tied into what we're trying to do on facilities.
Yeah. When did you come on board, Todd?
I came on in 2012.
Okay. So before that, and it was, you know, we had to let go of a lot of people. We had run through our rainy day fund and then needed a tax increase. I guess it's just, how is it that we don't know that we end up in that same position moving forward here?
How do we avoid that situation?
Mm-hmm.
It's at that time, there wasn't the five-year forecast to say decisions today will have impacts financially over the next several years. That tool wasn't in place. When I came on, I was asked to put that tool together. And so I think that it helps us forecast better where we think we will be, because we can say the decision today has an impact 5 years from now, and it looks like whatever that story looks like. So that's a safeguard. The rest is just being prudent in the management of what we need and how we serve our students.
All right. Let's move on quickly to the Recreation Master Plan. You heard from Ken Fisher from Park City Municipal saying that the joint use agreement expires after 5 years. Why is that? I mean, it seems like we've put a lot of...
Well, I believe it's a five-year agreement that automatically renews.
Yeah.
So I think that's the way it's written legally, but the intention is for it to be a perpetual agreement.
All right. And in terms of the school facilities, I mean, what is the school district building as part of this $30 million? I think it's even more than that. Master plan.
So the master plan has brought us together as partners as we look at those different facility needs. There were a couple of facilities within that plan that were identified to be on district property. So you had a field house idea that would be on the Kearns, and you had an aquatic center expansion out at Ecker Hill. And so that's our partnership relationship is when those times come and those demands come for those spaces, we're already first in line talking about it, understanding what the dynamics are, what the financing would be. So that's our support as we go forward with the plan.
So if we decide to build the 5-6 school on Ecker Hill, do those fields then have to get replaced somewhere?
It's a good question. We have a team looking at that right now, trying to determine what that footprint is for 5-6 school, what all the programming is that needs to be inside that building, and then siting the building as well. So Ecker is one of the sites that they're reviewing. It's not the only one. So that committee will also be looking at a couple of other sites to determine which is the best. But if you want to play that scenario out, yeah, we'd have to figure out what that consequence is. And there are bigger things happening within the district as well. And at some point, Treasure Mountain will come down. And so there'll be some space there. Does that mean that we move fields around? There's all kinds of combinations of things once we start getting into that scenario. And so the partnership conversations are great. The committee that was asked to be formed that we'd be part of, we'll have those conversations to cross those bridges when we get there.
Yeah. And I know you guys got to get out of here. You got a retreat to get to. This is the second one this year so far?
Yeah, I think we're working as a group to get a little bit stronger. And this isn't really a traditional board retreat. We were invited by, the school board was invited by the administration. They have a weekly meeting on Wednesday mornings, and they invited us to come and have kind of a brainstorming session with them. I think in the past, the school board has, had their agenda, and the administration has kind of had theirs, and we're working on making sure that we're all on the same page. And we have so many big projects and critical things happening this year and as we move forward as a district that I think both sides, the administration and the school board, recognize that we need to spend more time together. Yesterday in our Tuesday board meeting or our work session, the full administrative team was there, and they tend to come to our Tuesday meetings. And now we're going to start to return the favor and go to attend some of their administrative meetings as well to just have a better working relationship and be on the same page.
Yeah, so do you have a facilitator coming in? I saw the agenda with a number of questions. Who's asking those questions?
I'm not aware of who's facilitating.
The superintendent will be leading that discussion.
Yeah.
All right, and then will board member Phil Kaplan be there?
I believe so, yes.
All right. Any information on his replacement and how that process is going to work?
We're going to post shortly. I think there'll be a two to three week application process. I hope that we'll have, ample time to go out to the community, do some information sessions to anyone who's interested. JJ is running that process. And so if anyone has any ideas with regards to suitable candidates, or if you are listening to this and you are interested in serving the school district, please reach out to, JJ or myself or any of the board members, and we'd love to talk to you about, the benefits of being on the school board and what it entails. It's a truly great responsibility and projects that we're working on, and we hope that we can get someone excellent in that spot.
Okay, Andrew Kaplan, Todd Halber, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:49. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Well, the Kimball Arts Center presents its annual Wasatch Back Student Art Show. It opened in the main gallery last week. It will remain on display through May 28th in the studio. With details, I have Education Director Amy McDonald, along with one of those works who's being displayed. I have Sadie Abu-Haidar. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Sure. Amy, tell us what you've gotten to display.
This is a great exhibit this year. The theme is A Closer Look, and we have over 400 pieces of artwork that explores the theme of A Closer Look. So that could be looking at something more in depth, it could be looking at an idea, it could be looking at form, shape, structure. So we have all kinds of works.
So paintings, sculpture?
Yes, you name it. We actually have quite a bit of sculpture, so 2D, 3D, all different mediums. The array is amazing.
So is it a juried show or just basically anybody who wants to be in it can be in it?
Anyone that wants to be in it can be in it. And that's what's so great about a show like this is because it's all about the community. And it's the time that we get to showcase student artwork in a professional setting.
Okay. The information, like the theme that you give to teachers, what? Like when school starts?
Yes. And so we vote on it. So right now the voting for next year's theme is underway. And what you do, there are two drawings in our interactive area in the exhibit. One is art and color and one is art and the environment. And you have to color in a square on the grid as your vote for the theme for next year. And once that's decided, that's what we'll go with.
All right, Sadie, as I mentioned, you have a piece in the show. What did you do?
So I've been working on a lot of pieces that I hope to be coloring pages. And so I made one with the same theme, but it's on a mirror. It was actually a gift that I gave to my sister for Christmas. It has a dolphin on it and a sailfish, and it has different ocean themes inside the dolphin and the sailfish, along with coral reefs and a bunch of fish in the background. And I just thought that that would be great because you're taking a closer look into the ocean as well as you can physically look in the mirror.
And see the reflection.
Yeah.
Interesting. So what else? You said you worked on a number of pieces. Is that the only one you have in there or do you have others?
I don't have another one in there, but this summer I was hoping to make a bunch of art pieces that look like coloring pages or that I could print on note cards or postcards to sell at the Silly Market and to just sell my artwork.
Awesome. So what did you paint? What did you use to paint onto the mirror?
I actually used thin point Sharpies. I'm really into thin pens, and the Sharpies just work the best for me.
And it doesn't rub off?
No. So they Sharpies are not like other pens. They made them so they don't rub off unless I actually that one a little bit rubbed off. But that's only if you do it within like the first 5 seconds. But it like cools immediately, so you don't really have a problem with it smearing.
Yeah. So I'm sure you've been to the exhibit. You were there for opening night. What did you think about what was on display?
Yeah. Well, I actually didn't go. I had to go to my training for I'm becoming a swim coach, so I wasn't there.
So have you seen the exhibit yet?
No, I haven't had enough time, but I'm hoping to this weekend.
Yeah.
I'm really excited.
Okay. Amy, I believe everything's for sale, right? Not yours, though, because you gave it to your sister.
Yeah, no, I couldn't do that.
So this is a new experiment that we tried this year, and we sort of laying the groundwork for future efforts as we thought, gosh, you know, if students are exhibiting in a professional setting, we would give them the opportunity to sell their work if they so chose. So it's optional this year, and several of the students said, yeah, let's try it. Let's see what happens. And believe it or not, there are a number of people who said, I would really like to buy that piece. So there's that part of the process, too, that we'd like to continue to open up to student participation.
All right, so go early, because it'll be sold if you don't get there
That's
soon.
Right. You get the red dot.
Okay, as I mentioned, it's on through May 28th, just regular hours?
Yes. Yep, 7 days a week, and free and open to the public. We've had 11 schools participate, and there's over 400 pieces of artwork. So definitely worth taking a closer look.
Okay. Amy, Sadie, thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much.
KPCW News Time now, 8:55. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, May is Bike to Work Month, and Park City and Mountain Trails Foundation have a number of events planned to celebrate. In the studio, I have Julia Collins, Park City Senior Transportation Planner, and Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So I found no information on either your website, Charlie, or the city's website, so I don't really know what's going on.
That's quite all right. You know, we wanted to get here early. I think one of my personal pet peeves is when you hear about an event the day before or 2 days before and you already have plans and you're like, shoot, that sounds fantastic, but I can't make it. So we wanted to get the word out now that some of the events that we're doing on the 19th and the 31st, so you can mark your calendars and participate. And we should have some flyers and things up on our website by the end of the week.
You'll actually see, I think, a little bit more activity in terms of communicating this event, Leslie, than we've done in the past. It's sort of always just come together. But this year, we're working much more closely with Park City Municipal and Julia and so forth. So I think we have a little bit more of a team going on it. So we're hopefully going to have it out there in a big way.
Okay. So what, you have 2 dates planned, or do you have month-long events happening?
So let me start with the month, and maybe Charlie, I'll pass it off to you.
I'll fill in details.
I love it. Awesome. So on April 27th, Park City Council adopted a resolution that May is Bike Month and Bike Safety Month, and the week of May 15th is Bike to Work Week in Park City. And we've done a statewide celebration with Governor Mike Leavitt. He started this in 1997, and the League of American Bicyclists have actually started Bike Month since 1956. So we're taking that and bringing it here to Park City. And the bulk of the opportunities will be on May 19th and then also on May 31st. The 19th is a variety of agencies coming together where we're having a bike to school day for all of the elementary students. In Park City, there'll be three locations where the elementary students can meet and get a police escort to school. So we'll have the PC Mark, the end of Comstock, and the Aspen Villas, those three locations. And also our council has generously donated helmets for the kids. So if your kid doesn't have a helmet, regardless of their age, please come to those three locations and you can have the opportunity to get a helmet as you bike to school.
And then what's Mountain Trails doing that day?
Okay, and so at the same time, there's several other locations, including out in Centerville Basin, which I don't know what that one is at the moment. But we will be doing what we've done in the past, which is we'll be out on the corner at Squatters, and the Squatters is providing some breakfast, finger food, and coffee. And then we'll also be at, this is a new location, which I think is really going to benefit the Old Town folks, is basically we will be at the Park City Library as well. So those two locations will be operating from 7:30 until probably the interest dies off. If you make it to ride to one of those locations, one thing that's going to be kind of fun, and we've done in the past, but I think we have a little bit more swag for this one, is we will be doing a raffle. So when you show up at one of those locations, fill out a little form. Your name's going to go into a raffle, and we're going to pull those later. You don't have to be present to win. All the local bike shops have contributed tune-ups, and the ski areas are contributing lift rides, and so there's a lot of stuff. So that definitely is worth your while to show up. Plus, you get free breakfast, so you can't go wrong with that. So, yeah. So Mountain Trails will be at the library, and we'll probably have a presence at Squatters as well. So we'll actually be at two locations this year. And we'll be doing just kind of just our general thing, is just getting out there and hopefully encouraging people and thanking them for being on their bikes. And you know, people have additional questions. It's kind of informal Q&A sometimes, so great. And then later in the month, you know, Leslie, as you well know, this is Mountain Trails sort of membership month. We'll be out at various coffee shops throughout the month, but it all comes together at the end, and this is one of the beauties of this with the Mountain Madness Trails Open House, Trails Everything Open House. The city and ourselves are working together much closer on this. So there could have been two different events, and now we put it all together so that Summit County Transportation, the e-bike program, what all the other trail organizations are going to be doing. Once again, we're going to pull that all together, and we're going to be at the DoubleTree this year. And that's also, once again, Epic Promise is the main sponsor for this. We'll have additional movies. We'll be starting at 5:30 as an open house, and you can basically come in, ask questions. There'll be refreshments. There'll be food. And, of course, we'll have these movies afterwards. And I think Jack Thomas is going to be talking at that.
Councilmember Tim Henney will be one of the council members will be offering a welcome.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, just backpedaling, one more event on the 19th, there'll be a bike to work event with the mayor.
Right,
so that's
exactly
where the event with the mayor is. So come to Squatters at the Olympic Welcome Center at 7:30, and the mayor will do a nice warm welcome and then bike off to work and potentially stopping at the library as well.
Okay. Julia, Charlie, we'll look for those flyers.
Great. Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
Thanks for your time.
Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City Hospital, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, the Promontory Foundation, and All Seasons Resort Lodging.